In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
On Monday, the much-anticipated IG report was finally released. Known as the FISA report, it detailed abuse by the FBI to go to the special FISA court, which deals with foreign intelligence, to open a warrant and spy on then-candidate Trump. And that action, for many in the media, became the proof that Trump was colluding with the Russians. After all, the FBI couldn't get the warrant, so the story went, if they didn't have some kind of proof that Trump and his team were working with the Russians. Except, as you probably know by now, it was completely false. And the important thing with the FISA isn't that they accidentally submitted false information or information suspicions that eventually were proved false. No, the important thing is that they knowingly submitted false information that they knew was provably false at the time they submitted it. But it created the narrative that Trump was somehow guilty of colluding with the Russians to steal the election. All false. And yet here we are now at the threshold of impeachment because on Monday, the Democrats announced they would draft articles of impeachment. Sometimes it's good to remember how we got here. And I'd like to remind you that the day after the Democrats retook the House in 2018, Molly Hemingway was on the train from New York to D.C. when she overheard Jerry Nadler on the phone saying that the D's were all in for impeachment. Remember, they spent 2018 promising voters they wouldn't impeach. But one of the more interesting nuggets was this, Nadler telling the caller that the problem was that any investigation wouldn't take long enough to last until the presidential election. So right there, now you know why they dragged this all out. This is the day after the election. It's been planned this entire time. If you're on the right politically, if you support President Trump, you should feel completely vindicated. You stood by him despite the endless negative press, the onslaught of deranged people on the left, but you have truth on your side. And that is now confirmed. I'd like to welcome now John Solomon. He's the award-winning investigative reporter formerly with The Hill, where he continually exposed the deep state and attacks on President Trump by the FBI. He is now a Fox News contributor, but you can follow all of his great reporting on John Solomon Reports. John, it's great to talk to you again.
Good to be with you on such a busy day.
Yeah, that is for sure. You know, we've got about 10 million questions for you, but let's dig into the FISA side of things. You have been following the IG report for months. You've been extremely accurate on all of your assessments, thanks to your great sources. So did it surprise you that the IG did not find any political bias when, to the average person, there was bias all over the place? Or is that what your sources were telling you to expect?
So I think the IG is saying something a little more nuanced. He's not saying there wasn't any bias, because obviously there was bias in these text messages. What he is saying is a very narrow thing. And today in his testimony and throughout this period of time when he's been talking about testimony, he's tried to say something very narrow. And that is, I did not find a documentary or a testimonial claim that somebody took a specific action because they hated Donald Trump. Now, he said in his testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee that I can't get in the minds of people and try to understand what they were doing. And some of the explanations that were given to me for why they withheld things, did all of these mistakes, don't make sense to me. They don't add up. I can't get in their mind and judge individual actions. All I can say is no one put it in an email and nobody testified to the idea that a specific person's biases led to a specific action. So he's not denying, because everybody knows that the bias expressed in the page struck letters, text messages are irrefutable, and that they were fireable offenses. Remember, in Pete Strzok's disciplinary file that led to his termination, they called his expression of political bias in those FBI text messages an act of misconduct. So no one is saying that bias didn't occur. No one is saying that it wasn't misconduct to have expressed that bias. What Horowitz is saying is I couldn't find a documentary or testimonial piece of evidence that said a specific action was took because of a specific bias. And I think that's a much more narrower claim than what people have been concerned about.
Well, you've got the situation of documentary evidence where you've got an email that says, I really hate Trump and we're going to go get that bastard. Or you've got the outcomes of actions, which to me in itself is a form of evidence. So why would the FBI intentionally mislead the FISA court if not for bias? Or are we supposed to believe misleading the court happens all the time and that's just par for the course?
I have to tell you, in watching the testimony today, I walked away with a deep concern. And that concern is that Horowitz seemed to suggest that this may not be the only place where the FBI has had problems with the FISA court. He doesn't believe that this was an isolated incident. And I think that that's troubling to me. Now, we know from an earlier report just a month ago, so we know all the problems with Christopher Steele, right? They didn't vet him. They didn't flag derogatory information about him. They didn't even, when they found out his information was bad, they didn't go back to the court. Well, in an earlier report, I think just a month ago, Horowitz made clear that was going on for all informants. In fact, there was a culture in the FBI of hiding the bad problems that informants might have. So I think when you're Michael Horowitz, you might be hovering, you know, we are all focused on Russia because it dominated our country's experience for the last 3 years. He's been looking at hundreds of instances of informants being handled, cultures of leaking. He's got an ongoing investigation of leaking. So when they have a story leaked and then use it to corroborate something in the dossier, even though they knew it went back to Christopher Steele and they were trying to pretend it was independent, he's saying, you know, I've seen this in other cases. I see a culture of this going on. That may be the most troubling thing. The implicit message of Horowitz today is that the FBI may have far more systemic problems than just what happened in the Russia case, that you shouldn't look at Russia in a vacuum. You might want to look at the institution as having a significant problem with surveillance, FISA. Now, any reasonable person is going to say, an average person is going to look at it and say, those guys were biased. They said they were going to stop Trump. And, oh, look, they took all those actions and they did try to stop Trump. That's going to be left in the eye of the beholder. But I think Horowitz has been trying to get people to focus on the broader issue here, which is you have an institution of the FBI capable of seriously infringing the liberties of Americans, and it is sick. It has a problem. It is much more systemic. Don't look at it just as Russia was the only bad moment in the timeline. And I think that's what he's been trying to do with his testimony. We'll debate the bias issues. We know there were biased agents. There's not any doubt. The more troubling thing is, bias or no bias, they violated the law when they doctored documents. They misled the court when they withheld evidence. That is a problem whether there's bias or not. And I think at the end of the day, if there isn't a reckoning for all the people who did something wrong, this temptation to do it again will be high. And we won't have fixed anything or learned anything from it. There has to be a far greater penalty than what's been imposed so far if we're going to avoid future instances of Russia collusion and all the things that fell from it.
Well, just in listening to him talk, it almost sounds like because, you know, and again, he says he didn't find documentary evidence of bias. That tells me that the FBI knows the types of things that he's going to be looking for, and they're pretty good at not putting that into any kind of documentary evidence.
And I think that's why when Horowitz said, a lot of the explanations for why things happen still don't make sense to me. I don't buy it, but I'm not going to get in the head of people. My job is to look for proof that someone said I specifically took this because I hate Trump. So you can see time frames where, and this is where the Republicans and the defenders of the president can make a compelling case. They text these things, and then 24 hours later, they did why. And that, you know, there's a logical explanation that must have motivated their action. Horowitz used a much more difficult standard, which is if I can't find somebody who specifically said, I specifically withheld that piece of information because I hate Donald Trump, that I'm going to conclude that I couldn't find evidence of bias influencing specific decisions. But he's been clear all along that Strzok and Page expressed enormous animus for Trump. And perhaps the most important bias of all, the one that hurt the American public more than any others, and Donald Trump is the bias the FBI did know that is highlighted in the report of Christopher Steele. Christopher Steele was allowed to use a political opposition research document and his hatred for Trump to inject false information into the FBI and into the court system. And that is the real trigger for why we had a three-year investigation. If they don't get that first FISA with Christopher Steele, this investigation would have been shut down. So
think of the long-term damage that did too. I mean, just this whole
enormous.
Yeah, I mean, we are at
enormous
the point
damage.
Of we are at the point of impeachment because of all of these actions. I think that's the really shocking thing here.
There's an amazing line in the Stroke letter, the disciplinary letter that led to Stroke's firing, that it says that the damage that those text messages and the conduct of the FBI in this case caused will take years for the Bureau to overcome.
Oh, absolutely.
Our premier law enforcement agency going to be wounded for years because of this episode.
Yeah. Well, and they deserve to be, unfortunately.
Absolutely.
Let's go ahead and take a break there. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with John Solomon. And coming up in the next segment, we'll be talking about Inspector General Horowitz is testifying to the Senate committee. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. Talking today to John Solomon. He is an award-winning investigative reporter, formerly with The Hill. He is now a Fox News contributor, but you can follow all of his great reporting on johnsolomonreports.com. He's got a number of great articles up there dealing with the IG report, and we'll link all of those up on iSpyRadio.com as well. And so, John, we got the IG testifying today in front of the Senate committee hearings, and it really is shocking when he says that nobody that touched this FISA stuff is at all vindicated.
Yeah, what a complete slapback at James Comey and James Baker, the former general counsel, the former director of the FBI, who were taking a victory lap very falsely, obviously, when this report came out Monday. It was a very bad spin job on their part. But he put that idea to rest today in the most cogent of terms. And when he said nobody who touched the FISA document can find themselves vindicated, the sweeping nature of misconduct and bad behavior and false information that the FBI allowed to persist in the court system is a detriment to all people. And it is a black mark on the history of the FBI. And I think that was a valuable public service when he made that comment, because for a couple of days now, the media defenders, the Democrats, the Comeys, the Bakers have tried to pretend this IG report was in some way vindicating or absolving. And he knocked that down in a big way today.
Yes, absolutely. So we've got a situation, though, when you listen to him testify and also when you actually read through the report, it really is, I think, in many ways, stunning how low the threshold is to have opened this investigation into a presidential candidate. I mean, you've got somebody that's running for the highest office in the land. I mean, shouldn't this have been a moment of grave reflection, giving everyone some serious pause here? I mean, shouldn't the FISA court itself have raised the bar and not lowered it? I mean, didn't anyone stop and think, you know, maybe this isn't the best idea?
That is something that came up dozens of times today in Mr. Horowitz's comments. He remarked time and time again that there was no requirement and therefore nobody did it. And it's troubling to him. No one in the senior levels of the Justice Department were consulted when these things were going on. And one time when a senior Justice Department official did raise their hand, there's a guy who ran the National Security Division, and he said, listen, this is in early October. I don't think we should be using Christopher Steele as an informant paid by Hillary Clinton to investigate Donald Trump as the basis of our FISA warrant. And what did the FBI do? And the one time a senior justice official was advised and was consented, they ignored his advice. And Andy McCabe and James Comey chose to go ahead and use Christopher Steele the one time someone actually was consulted. So there was a culture in the FBI of not listening to the advice and in most cases not seeking the advice. And the biggest takeaway from today's hearing, the biggest plea that Michael Horowitz makes in his recommendations and his testimony today, let's create a higher threshold, a higher review system. Let's make sure that people can't speed past obvious road bumps like they did here. And it'll be very interesting to see if the Republicans and Democrats on the committee, the Congress, which has the ability to legislate solutions to this, if they move ahead and try to do something to prevent this from occurring to future Americans. I think I heard in Senator Graham's comments today for the first time ever, this is a man, a senator who's been very supportive of the FISA court. He's not sure he wants to renew the FISA court unless there's major reforms.
Yes,
that's
I heard that.
That's a big pivot from a guy who was a big FISA court defender for a long time.
Yeah, yeah, I heard that. That is a big turnaround. Yeah, in terms of this never happening again, because I have said this from the beginning, I know that you have said this from the beginning, is that this is something that simply should not be allowed here in America, and it should never happen again. But listening to Horowitz testify, I don't see anything at this point that is going to stop this. I mean, in fact, it would have been really good if one of the senators had said, so is there anything right now stopping President Trump from opening an investigation into any of his political rivals using the FISA court? And also, should they lie to the court, there is no ramification for having lied to the court to open that investigation. I mean, is that pretty much what the takeaway is from that?
I think that is the concern that most people still have. And I think the real flight stick is in the hand of Bill Barr and John Durham right now. Mm-hmm. So the way I look at the IG report, the IG has no ability to create punishment, right? All he can do is create a factual analysis of what happened. And in the past, recently, remember, he recommended James Comey for prosecution. The Barr Justice Department declined. Yeah. He recommended Andy McCabe. The Barr Justice Department has yet to take action on that. Pete Strzok hasn't been in any way other than fired, prosecuted. So if you're the IG, you're starting to wonder whether his recommendations for prosecution anyone's even paying attention to. So I can understand that frustration. There is a moment now with this extraordinary record of misconduct now for, available for all to see, for the Barr Justice Department to take the following steps. One, go to the FISA court and withdraw these applications. Go to the court and say, we now know we misled you, and I am taking the action as the executive branch in withdrawing these and accepting whatever penalty and punishment the court deems is appropriate. That will force this court to react. I don't know if the attorney general is going to do that. I've had people tell me that something that should be contemplated. That could be the first act of accountability, a public acknowledgement. We misled you. We're formally withdrawing this, and you have the right to punish anyone you deem worthy. The court can take many actions. They can hold people in contempt. They can strip their law licenses. They can prevent future FBI agents and lawyers from ever appearing before the court again, which would, you know, end their careers, essentially, if you're an intelligence expert. The second phase is John Durham has to take the evidence in the report and prosecute anyone who committed a crime. Those crimes could range from the obvious one in the report, someone doctored evidence, falsified evidence to hide the fact that Carter Page was a CIA asset working for our government while they were trying to portray him as a Russian stooge trying to betray our country. That there has to be a prosecution of that and perhaps other cases here, false statements, other things. Then the third aspect is for those that don't rise to a sustainable criminal prosecution, will people be disciplined? Will the Justice Department go and say, James Comey, Andy McCabe, your lawyers, you should lose your law license. You 10 people in the FBI who reviewed this FISA and you withheld that information, we know you were the person that did it, you're fired. No pension, you're gone. So there should be a wave of accountability that occurs. If that does not happen, and that's all in Bill Barr's power now, if that does not happen, I can guarantee you we will have another Russia collusion abuse just like this one.
Absolutely, because we see it time and again. People aren't punished. Well, guess what? People are going to keep right on doing it.
Absolutely.
All right, let's go and take a break. Coming back, we'll have more with John Solomon. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking today to John Solomon. He's an award-winning investigative reporter, formerly with The Hill. He's now a contributor at Fox News. You can follow all of his great reporting on johnsolomonreport.com, which we'll link up on ispyradio.com. And, you know, before we let time go flying by here, I have to ask you about Adam Schiff and him letting it slip that, Giuliani was talking with Solomon and vice versa. What are your next steps on that? Are you looking to sue?
So that's a great question. So I just wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal talking about what chilling an effect that has already had on me and also an earlier time in my life when the FBI took my phone and mail, what chilling effect it had on my reporting back then. So that's the first step. Educate the public about why this isn't just a normal action by Congress. It's an action that chills the First Amendment and it wasn't what our founding fathers intended. I've been talking to some appellate lawyers and others to see if there is some litigation so that the damage is already done to me. I can't get that back. I don't want to get paid by Adam Schiff. I'm not looking to make any money. But could there be a useful litigation that could create new guardrails so that a future journalist, a future attorney who has attorney-client privilege like Rudy Giuliani, doesn't have their rights so easily violated like Adam Schiff did? I think the only valuable thing to do for the American public is to see if there's some litigation that can force that issue and enforce the creation of guardrails. And if that doesn't happen, then we have to rely on people like Mike Turner, the congressman from Ohio, who is talking about introducing legislation to limit congressional authority. So I'll know in a couple of weeks, but we're certainly talking to lawyers, and I think there's a group of people, Rudy Giuliani, myself, Jay Sekulow, Devin Nunes, who potentially together could create a very strong victim pool and try to create an argument in the court and cause the courts to tell us where Congress's power ends and where our liberties begin.
Well, it was just rather shocking when that happened, because here Adam Schiff is in the middle of trying to impeach Trump for abuse of power. And what does Adam Schiff do? He abuses power.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
It really is. Yep. It really is. So looking
scary. Well,
yeah, it absolutely is scary. So looking to the future here, first of all, just to go back to the IG report, was there anything in there that just totally surprised you?
You know, I knew it was bad from 3 years of reporting. And in some cases, you know, there are the 17 most serious allegations or serious acts of misconduct. And all of those emanated or could be traced to one of the stories I wrote in 17 and 18. So I was familiar with all 17 of those. But there's an appendix one, that is the most jaw-dropping. It's essentially a spreadsheet.
Yep.
And it shows 51, in a single FISA application, 51 violations of FBI rules. 9 of them being intentionally false statements, meaning they stated something to the court that was completely opposite of what was in their files. Mike Flynn was convicted for a single false statement. Mm-hmm. George Papadopoulos went to prison for a single false statement. The FBI committed 9 false statements in a single FISA warrant. That number stands out to me as extraordinary, beyond anything I could have imagined the FBI engaging in. Now, among those 51, beyond the 9 false statements, there are 9 misleading statements, and there are 33 statements where they told the court, this has happened, and it turns out the FBI has no substantiation or proof that it happened. Now, they can't prove they're false, but they also can prove they didn't meet the validated standard. 51 violations of FBI rules, 51 failures to meet the object of the law in a single FISA application. And I think that number stands out in my mind, that this is not an ordinary set of Keystone Cop mistakes. It is a systematic failure to be honest with the court, to trample on Americans' reputations. And I think of that number and the scope of the misconduct shocked even me after 3 years of reporting on it.
Mm. Well, looking forward to somebody like General Flynn that is still up in the air. What are your thoughts on that? Because the FBI was apparently withholding exculpatory evidence from him. Although when you read through the IG report, they say that even within the FISA application, they don't have to notify the court that, yes, there is, in fact, exculpatory evidence. The whole thing is shocking.
It is. I think the lack of rules. Now, there's been a set of stated rules, right? We're always, James Comey said, we always intend to give the exculpatory information. The fact that there isn't a cemented requirement is troubling. And I think there's an opportunity for Congress to tighten up the FISA rules to protect against the sort of things that happened here and to make sure that the unstated rules are actually stated now, and that there are criminal liabilities for someone who violates any of those rules. That could be a big improvement here. Sidney Powell is going to do a great job defending Mike Flynn. She's a tremendous lawyer, and I'm sure that the judge has to be looking at her new body of evidence and be very concerned about the conduct in this case. But at the end of the day, the people I'm watching most closely right now, Bill Barr, because he can cause a lot of things to happen here that amount to accountability, and those FISA judges, they've been quiet for 3 years. They owe the American public some expression of what's on their mind, and whether they see a fix in it, and also whether they're self-reflecting on whether they let the American public down by not asking more questions. Remember, there wasn't a single hearing on these 4 FISA warrants. They didn't have a hearing once, even though they were investigating the sitting president and then the nominee, the duly elected nominee. The court never once had a hearing to ask questions. I think that in and of itself is a concerning fact that gets overlooked in some of this information.
Well, plus, since we had talked to an attorney, I think, in fact, your attorney, that was saying that it is a felony to knowingly lie to the FISA court. Not just that, but also when you find out that you have accidentally lied to the court, that's a felony. Yeah. And yet none of these judges have done anything. Looking forward, though, the other guy, I think, is Durham. Do you see that this IG report undermines anything that he is doing? I know it's a very different set of rules that he's operating under, but on the political side of things, Horowitz, the headline immediately was, oh, there's no political bias. But now it's going to be it's going to be a tough situation if Durham turns around and says, well, but here's a whole bunch of people that we're charging with crimes.
Yep. Well, listen, I think the report lays out a good predicate for charging people with crimes. When you falsify a document to hide a fact from the court, that's a crime. That's a slam dunk. In fact, if there isn't a prosecution of that person, I'm going to be floored. Hmm. But there are nine false statements in the FISA thing that Horowitz has laid out. Nine statements that they can make knowing and willful conclusions about because the evidence in the file clearly contradicted. So the FBI got the evidence, they read it, they put it in the file, then they said something different. Every person that contributed to cause that information to be misled or failed to step forward and correct it when they knew it was filed with the court in opposition to what they had could be charged with a crime. Will Bill Barr do that? Will John Durham do that? I don't know. The second piece of the puzzle is John Durham has the ability to find out what went on before the FBI started the FISA warrant. What went on in the spring and summer? What was that Papadopoulos contact in Italy about and in London about and the early probe of Garter Page? We still don't know who were behind those. They clearly predate the FBI's official investigation. Those could have been foreign allies, the Five Eyes. They could have been a private operation like Steele. We need to know what set in motion those earlier activities, and I think John Durham will give us a tremendous answer on that, and we'll know. We'll be able to close the book on this. We'll know how it started, who meddled in it, whether were other foreign governments meddling in this. But right now, thanks to the IG, we know two things. Christopher Steele's dossier was garbage, and it was wrongly used to support a FISA, and a FISA court was terribly, not occasionally, terribly and completely misled by our own FBI.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a good start to this longer-term accountability project.
Yeah, well, laws only mean something if they're actually enforced, so let's hope that AG Barr does, in fact, move forward with some criminal charges on this. John Solomon, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
You too. Appreciate the attention.
If you're just joining us, you missed our conversation with investigative reporter John Solomon. But did you know if you miss part of the iSpy Radio show, it airs 5 times on the weekend, Saturday and Sunday. And because all of our stations stream live, you can just tune into the next one to catch what you missed. You can also always re-listen to the entire show on the podcast, which is available usually on Mondays. Head to iSpyRadio.com and click on the About tab at the top to find our list of affiliate stations and their live streams. Joining us now, Scott McEwen, New York Times bestselling author of American Sniper, made into an award-winning film of the same name. His latest book is The Trigger Mechanism, coming out February 2020, and we'll be getting a sneak peek on that one later on in the show. Scott, it's great to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you guys.
You know, one of my earliest political memories, in fact, probably the earliest, was when Nixon was getting impeached, and he was making that announcement on TV that he was resigning. And just looking back at that, that's such a surreal moment in my memories. And now we have this latest impeachment. And talk about a surreal moment. At 9 a.m., they come out and say, Trump's the devil, and to save the nation, we're going to have to impeach him. And then literally an hour later, they come out with USMCA and say, well, he may be the devil, but he makes pretty good trade deals, and we can work with that. I mean, how bizarre is this?
It is. And, you know, the most interesting thing, too, is I think the Democrats, while they're bringing this or about to bring this, quote, impeachment, are already running from it. I think that what that MCA announcement, the next moment after that is Nancy Pelosi realizing that her base, while they may have some extreme left, if you will, snowflakes and radicals within their base, they are still, you know, trying to appeal to that more middle of the road, sensible working class American, which is really what the bread and butter of the Democratic Party used to be, as opposed to now.
Yes,
it used to
yeah.
be, you know, those union people, those people that wanted a better wage, that kind of stuff. So that's why the Democratic Party always was viable But I think Nancy's now realizing that with what they've been doing lately, they're not viable. They're just not viable as a party in the United States with this radical leftist agenda that they're trying to propose. And that was their way of trying to run from that, I think.
Well, it's very possible. And I mean, the articles of impeachment themselves are pretty vague. They don't actually involve any crime. It's just suspicion that Trump is a mean guy, basically. What do you think about maybe this notion that it's designed to fail? Because if it fails and the impeachment vote goes down, Trump doesn't get his trial in the Senate. And at the same time, they can say, well, see, we really are reasonable.
Yeah. Well, you know, that could be one theory. I mean, I'm hearing that more and more lately, Mark. And, you know, it may be that may be the truth. At the end of the day, we're going to know relatively soon whether that is, in fact, the case. But I think more importantly as well, whether it fails initially or fails later, she's just trying to feed that radical left base to say, see, we impeached him. He was impeached. That's an impeached president. And as simplistic as these people really are, that gives them some food for discussion in their dinner parties and, you know, while they're sitting around, whatever, doing whatever type of substance they do, to actually look at each other and say, yeah, that's an impeached president or whatever, as if that was some sort of victory. And as pyrrhic as that may sound and as simplistic, I really believe that's the base. I believe that's the base they're trying to appeal to.
Yeah, it could be. They're certainly just filled with rage and can't seem to let things go. It really has not been a very good week for the left. First, they had this embarrassing articles of impeachment, and now they've got this Horowitz hearing with the IG report being released as well. To me, what really stood out was the fact that not one major media figure showed any outrage whatsoever after the IG report proved that these guys had been lied to for 2 years by their Russia collusion sources. They were played, and yet I haven't seen a single mainstream media pundit or talking head or journalist come forward and apologize for their part in this political coup. What were your thoughts and reactions to the Horowitz hearings?
I believe the Horowitz report somewhat, if you will, vindicates, and I'm not spiking the football, but I'm telling you that I think you and me and a lot of other people that have really been watching this subject for the last 2 years understood that that's exactly what happened. I mean, there was really no revelations in that report from my position, you know, from my viewpoint, other than the fact that, you know, I saw a description of how the events took place and how, you know, the Papadopoulos and the Page and, you know, how they were trying to piece together the rights, if you will, or the ability to go before these FISA judges. And I never really understood exactly how these FISA judges would be so fooled by this lack of information and this bad information that they were being fed in this whole thing. And now the sequence of events is really being placed together and pieced together. And I think that you saw the reaction from Barr and Durham after, you know, they were trying to characterize this as, oh, everybody's been vindicated. James Comey's vindicated. They're all vindicated because there was really no political aspiration in this acts of bad acts, if you will, that took place here. And I thought the most telling testimony in front of the Senate was the questioning of, you know, when they questioned Horowitz, was when he said, look, you know, is this a vindication? And he said, this is nothing but an indictment. He said, I think that there are indictable offenses that took place here within the documentation that I have here. And this vindicates no one. In fact, it really does tell you how bad things were going on at the FBI and everything else. But the bottom line is, I think that while he looked at the FBI and he was the watchdog for them, this goes far deeper than that. I think this always went to Brennan. I think this always went to the Attorney General's office. And I think this always went all the way to Obama. And I think that that's really what's going to come out once these indictments start flowing from Durham and from Barr. And I honestly believe, and have said it from day one, there will be indictments, and I believe it more now than ever.
Yeah, I do too. Certainly coming from Durham, especially since he went out of his way to say, yeah, I don't agree with your findings. So this can be very telling for sure. All right, let's go and take a break there. Come back. We'll have more with bestselling author Scott McEwen. Coming up, the FISA court, their silence is deafening. And welcome back. We're talking today to Scott McEwen. He's the New York Times bestselling co-author of American Sniper, made into an award-winning film of the same name. His books include the Sniper Elite series, City of Death, which is an excellent book on the healing process for vets, and Camp Valor, which is also now its own series. Your kids will wish that there was camp like that. So I want to get back to the FISA court, because I remember asking you about that several months ago. And in the last segment, you were saying you wonder how these guys could have been fooled. And I remember asking you, whether or not the FISA court judges were corrupt and maybe even a part of this. And I remember that conversation. There was this long pause and you said, I really don't even want to think that's possible. And now we have we know that the FBI lied to the court. They doctored evidence. They committed perjury. They failed to notify the court when they learned additional details that the first reporting was incorrect. Their first submission, I should say. And failing to report that is itself a felony. But the question remains, why have the judges been so quiet throughout all of this?
Well, as we both know, you know, the FISA court was always a secret court, and it was always supposed to be one that was dealing with extremely high level, you know, terrorist type, infiltrative type, you know, offenses. And it was set up after 9/11 for that purpose. So the fact that the judges haven't been more vocal, if you will, on a public basis, it's really not for sitting judges to come out and explain that they're upset over things. It's more the job of those that run these courts that are in charge of these operations, and they're doing this, for example, Durham and Barr and people of that nature, to really make sure that things stay clean. Now, that's not to say that there's not going to be some attorneys that are losing their licenses over this, which I expect that one attorney that submitted and doctored documents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Documents that actually went to the FISA court, we know now, and that was part of Horowitz's findings, are not going to, at a minimum, be disbarred and potentially even charged criminally, which they probably should be. But I think that, you know, the court system itself here, you rarely see a sitting judge comment on cases that are before them or potentially coming back before them. But there's another procedure that I heard of that I did not know about, where the Barr and Durham can ask that certain FISA warrants be decertified. In other words, the judges go back and actually look at those warrants again and say, if I were told the truth, would I have certified those warrants under those circumstances? And I can't remember the exact term, but I believe it's decertification of a warrant. And I expect that's probably one of the remedies they're going to do here. And when that happens, then I do believe the judge can publicly comment on those situations that took place there. And I think that those will be public findings on behalf of those judges. And that's where the hell is going to be to pay, if you will.
Well, we have certainly been told that the FISA court and the judges therein are all above reproach, they're just impeccable, and that there are all these safeguards against abuse. But as we learn in the IG report, there is almost no threshold whatsoever to open an investigation and get that warrant. This is from the IG report talking about the preparation and approval of FISA applications. It's on page 40. Quote, the FISA form does not specifically require the case agent to disclose exculpatory facts or facts that, if accurate, would tend to undermine the assertions being relied upon to support the government's theory that the target is a foreign power or an agent of a foreign power. So basically, they can lie to the court, present knowingly false information, and as in the case of Carter Page, they can know that everything they're submitting to the FISA court is false, and there is evidence to prove that it's false, but they don't have to mention any of that. They can get the warrant anyway. I mean, that is insane.
It may state that in the application, but you know, trust me. I mean, I've known a lot of attorneys general, prosecutors, and everything else. If you lie to a court in a warrant, you are going to have severe retribution. I mean, in your general, if you will, stages of the criminal system, there is a check and balance. And that check and balance is if that prosecutor comes to them and lies to them and knowingly does, these judges do not take it lightly. And I can't think that these FISA judges would take this lightly either. So I do not believe that while there may be some waffle room there, that at this level and at this level of spying that took place on a presidential campaign and then a president, that there is not going to be serious retribution, you know, on behalf of these judges. And I mean, you know, and I'm hopeful in our system that Barr and that Durham make sure that this happens.
Well, it'll certainly be interesting to see whether it's Barr that does the punishment or one of these judges finally steps up and says what you did was not okay. And you know, it's only happened once that I'm aware of in the history of the FISA court, and it was pretty devastating then. But and it was I think in March of 2011. So we'll see if anything actually happens. I do think that we're going to start to see some process changes here. At least I certainly hope so, because I think the FBI, frankly, has been dirty for years. I know the CIA has been dirty for years, and by that I mean there are gaps within the system and management structure to allow or perhaps even encourage people to veer off the reservation. So do you think that we are seeing the beginning of the end of this kind of corruption, that true reforms are in fact coming, or are the bad elements just going to go to ground and hide until Trump is out of office?
Well, I don't think they're going to have time, and I think Trump's going to be reelected. Were this the last term of his presidency, the latter may be the possibility, but I do not believe so. I believe this Trump will be reelected, just like I believed the first time and predicted that he would be elected. And I believe it's going to happen again. And I believe that this second term of Trump, because he has been known as someone that has been somewhat of a crusader for the man, for the working man and the average populace, as opposed to the elite that purport to run us in the swamp, I believe that there is going to be some cleaning, the likes of which this country hasn't seen probably since, you know, the revolution. And I think that this is going to be a situation where this is going to be cleaned up. And I'm hopeful for this country that it gets cleaned up hard and that there are some lessons that people are going to learn for the next 50 years. Because with men, always there's going to be corruption. Always is going to happen. It's just the nature of mankind.
Certainly will. Well, it certainly brings it up some questions about some previous moments as well. I mean, looking back at the Watergate scandal and to hear one of the plumbers tell his story, I mean, it sounds like a lot of the same guilt engineering that we've seen in today's methods to go after Trump. And I'm sure a lot of people would like to revisit the whole Kennedy assassination. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break there. Come back. We'll have more with author Scott McEwen and the trigger mechanism. And welcome back in our final segment now here on the iSpy Radio Show. Talking today to Scott McEwen. He's the New York Times best-selling co-author of American Sniper. His latest book is The Trigger Mechanism, coming out February 2020. You can find all of Scott's books up on the iSpy Radio store page. Just head there, and you can find a book for pretty much everyone on your list right there in one easy place. And so, Scott, you've got this new book coming out. It sounds terribly exciting. I know that my producer is just salivating waiting to get her hands on a copy of this. So why don't you talk to us a little bit about this book?
This book is called The Trigger Mechanism, and it's really Camp Valor 2.0 is what I originally thought we might be at the title, but we went with The Trigger Mechanism. And it's the second book in the series, the Camp Valor series, which is a series designed for young adults, although adults have come to really love it as well. And it's a message of patriotism for a group of kids that basically had gone to a wayward way, many of whom came out of jails, were sent to a camp called Camp Valor. They have to make a decision whether they want to do operations for the United States or be returned to jail to do what they were going to do. And essentially, they go through a camp that trains them to be young special operators for the United States government. And then they're infiltrated into groups where only youth can possibly get in there and do operations and kind of adventure for that those young individuals for the United States government. There's danger. You know, I hearken it back to the Hardy Boys series and Nancy Drew and, you know, Johnny Quest, a lot of high tech stuff. And Trigger Mechanism is the second installment of the series. The first rose to number 8 out of what all titles on Amazon, which is about what 4 million now.
Yeah.
And I'm hopeful that this one has the same impact. It has been recognized by many state library commissions as a forefront of young readers that don't like to read books in the younger age groups, 13 to 18, that are picking up this book and really enjoying it. And we're getting great reviews. And I'm really excited about Trigger Mechanism.
Well, it's not always easy to get kids to read, especially when there's video games and all that. But I really like how you, in fact, incorporate some of that into this book. And I'm just going to read this from Amazon. It says, when Jalen, a young gamer, puts on a set of VR goggles and logs into an online video game, he enters a digital world where, as in most games, points are awarded for kills. Only this time, unbeknownst to Jalen, the game has been re-engineered by a cyber terrorist known as Insight so that real human lives are taken with the click of a button. When Jalen logs off, he learns that he's just killed 53 innocent people. I mean, whoa. I mean, that is really chilling. So talk to us a little bit about your research and that went into putting this this book together.
Well, the research really was about high tech. As we all know now, we're having a situation where a lot of cars are going to be running by computers, and there's going to be, you know, driverless, you know, trucks, planes already exist, drones, things of that nature. And what this book really does is take that technology and say, what if that technology is taken over by a third party and they're controlling these driverless automobiles, planes, drones and vehicles, and basically using them for bad purposes? And I don't think that the technology is that far away. And certainly one of the biggest things that's going on amongst nation groups right now is taking over other people's drones and being able to control those drones, you know, for their own purposes. And so it really takes that creates a villain in the middle of it, and then the only way they can get this thing out is because his gamers involved, his kids have to do an infiltrate from Camp Valor to get the bad guys, and it's a real action adventure. It's got a good message. It's got a patriotic message, and I think it brings home to America that our youth are on these games a lot, and many times these games are not good for them, and it kind of has a message of, you know, maybe you should watch what your kids are doing because there's some evil stuff out there in the net as well.
Oh, absolutely. But I mean, what a premise, though, because like you say, there's all of these driverless cars, and you know, it's one thing when you've got a plane that crashes into a building. I mean, that's pretty horrifying, but the notion that suddenly you could have every car in the highway swerve left, I mean, it really is rather frightening where we're going sometimes when it comes to technology.
Right. And that's exactly what this addresses. It's kind of, it takes that and takes it to the next level of evil doing, if you will, but that evil doing level that we're taking it to is more reality than I think people want to understand. And the ability to take over these machines, I mean, that's one of the biggest things that Chinese and Americans are working on right now, is that yes. ability to take over the other person's drone. And yes. that's kind of the biggest technology that people are trying to do now, is being able to control those driverless, if you will, vehicles, some of which are war weapons, some of which are not, are yeah. just flat, yeah. you know, just intelligence weapons. But, you know, Camp Valor takes it there, and you know, and I'm very happy. And you know, I got a review the other day that I was particularly proud of. I wanted to tell you guys about. Eighth grader writes me from Minnesota, says she read the book, she read Camp Valor, and she loves it, and she wanted to have her whole class make it their book reading for their class for that whatever semester or term or whatever, and she had to give it to her teacher, who was a very, very liberal person. And she said, I didn't think they were going to approve it, Scott, but they took it. She read it. She came back and she said, I think this would be a great book for you all to read.
Awesome.
She said, I think I've converted my liberal teacher to being a little bit more conservative as a result of it.
Oh, how awesome is that? Well, that's just awesome.
Yeah.
Again, that is The Trigger Mechanism. We'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com. Scott, I want to thank you so much for your time today, and have a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you guys, and enjoy your time in Oregon. I miss it, and this is a great time of year up there with the snow and everything. And you know, keep on bringing the word. We're going to bring that state back to the right side, and hopefully it'll happen sooner rather than later.
Yes, we are. Thanks again. Before we go, John Solomon tweeted this soon after we spoke with him: reporters got too much wrong on Russia. There was no collusion. Carter Page wasn't a Russian spy. Surveillance was illegal. FBI was not vindicated. Time for a new type of news outlet. Stay tuned for big announcement next month. This really should be a moment for the mainstream media to rebuild trust, to pursue the people who misled them. But so far, they seem more interested to get Trump than get the truth. And that's too bad, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.